going forever. Moments go, time runs out. And then it hits you with pain. Things are great on the way out. Nobody's with you when you're on the way down. You got what you wish for. Is that what you
Welcome back to the Gods to Ghosts Volleyball Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Bemke. This podcast features our third and final part of our interview with UCLA All-American football tackle from 1958 and 1967, Manhattan Beach Open runner-up, Bill Leika. Stay tuned for the entire interview as Leika tells a classic story of a visit that Vogey made to his place in Charlotte, North Carolina when they were retired that has to do with fishing. You're not going to want to miss it. That's all I'm going to say.
All right, Leika, in 67, you and Bob Vogelsang, a.k.a. Vogey, teamed up to compete in that tournament. You ultimately finished second to the one and only team of Ron Ghost 8-0 Lang and Ron Von Mussel Von Hagen. So what do you recall about that 67 Manhattan Beach tournament? Let's take it from the start. Didn't you guys, from your first round match and then what you ended up doing all tournament with the adult beverages and memorable plays and all the crazy stuff that happened?
Well, for us to get to the finals, we had to play all sorts of very good players, and we goofed around most of the time. And for some reason, we made different weird shots. And I hit a serve straight up in the air. You know what it fit with a fist, mm-hmm. And it's a high ball, and there was a lot of wind. And the bent ball would come down, and the wind would blow it, and they wouldn't be able to make a play on it because they couldn't really have a set and then hit. They didn't mm-hmm. have, so we screwed them all up.
So what happened in that first round with you and Bogey? Do you remember who you lost to?
Oh no! What in the first round?
Yeah.
Gosh, no. No. But the Manhattan was probably the first one that one went down in history if you read the book. And you read the book. On that particular was the best Manhattan, the most people there, the most beer, throwing beer bottles into the play in between parks, and everybody was booing the other team.
So the crowd was rallying behind you and Bogey, is what you're telling me in the final?
Of course, because we are the underdog. Because I am the least of the four players, because I can't jump and I'm not fast, and it was really nice. Now they beat us two straight in a 2-11.
Yeah,
and that ended it. Everybody was gone crazy about all beer. That was the last time they could have a beer at the beach.
Yeah, because of the shenanigans that went on down there.
That particular match. Yeah,
it was. Oh, goodness.
Man, when we play against a better team, we just goof off and have a lot of good time. Sometimes we get it in the line, half an inch in, half out, and then the ref. Sometimes the refs would miss it, but I tell the ref, no, I think it went out. I give them the play. and I couldn't care less. But I tell you what, after there, we all went to a tavern. We all had beer. The whole group.
All the players or all the fans?
Oh, the players. We don't know the fans.
Do you remember which burn you went to?
What? No. It's on the boardwalk. We always went to the boardwalk. Yeah. And all the boardwalk places there. But and really, really nice, because they came in, the girls would come in, you know, in their bikini outfits, and just, you know, really cool. Yeah. Then you date them all. You know, try to date every different one.
Yeah.
Because they're all just beautiful women and great tans and stuff like that.
Oh, I believe it. That was California for you. So, yeah, that final, from my understanding, you know, you and Bogey lost in the first round and then decided to start drinking beer. And you basically drank beer for 2 days during points or during play, between play, up to the final. So did you have a comfortable buzz in that final when you played against Von Hagen and Lang, is it to say?
Oh, what?
Did you have a comfortable little beer buzz when you played in that final?
Oh, beer buzz afterward. Yeah. Now, one time, I walked under. I said,
"Didn't you do something with Von Hagen?"
Wait a minute. Yeah, I went under the thing and I walked up to Von Hagen. I said, "What are you going to do now? I'm going to knock the shit out of him."
Like you pretended like you were going to punch him, or you cocked your arm back.
I went over there to punch. Yeah, and he said, "Hey, go away." So okay, I'll go away. So I went back under the net.
Well, I heard what you did instead is you leaned in and gave him a kiss on the cheek, and the whole crowd went nuts.
Oh, that could be. That could have been.
Yeah, I think that's how the story goes.
I think that's probably what I did.
So you and Von Hagen were like, you know, went to UCLA together as freshmen and pledged Beta Theta Pi and were good friends and learned how to play together and won that Trophy Dash tournament. So years later, you're playing in the 67 Manhattan Beach Open Final. And just to get the crowd going, you went under the net, pretended like you were going to punch Von Hagen, and instead leaned in and gave him a kiss on the cheek. And I heard the crowd just went absolutely bonkers.
That's right.
Here's the 58 All-American tackle from UCLA, 6'2 and 202 pounds, you know, with his arm cocked, and then he's kissing Von Musel. That is pretty good stuff.
Oh, those are the days. Those were the days.
And then, like, any time you guys would go back and serve, I heard you and Bogey would, like, you know, bend down with your head between your knees and serve the ball, like, between your legs.
That's right. Oh, we did all that.
Made a mockery of it. Now, I got in that, and when every time you did that, the crowd would just go nuts.
That's right. Because they were all drunk.
Yeah. And then what made them throw all those beer bottles on the court? Well, I heard that happened like multiple times. It wasn't just a few, but they covered it.
If they weren't throwing it at me, they were throwing it at them.
At Von Hagen and Lang, because they were.
Oh, they were all so straight and so strict.
Yeah.
They think that's the world ending of some sort of a great, great, great sport. Who cares? It was just a ding dong game anyway, because nobody ever got paid.
Right. Well, there is that pride to it, and having your name on the pier, and you know, being remembered on the Mount Rushmore of volleyball. So I can see where Von Hagen and Lang come from that standpoint. But you invoke the opposite spectrum view of it, where it was, you know, more about the fun as opposed to.
That's right.
Yeah.
It wasn't
so
serious. I'm serious.
The dichotomy, so to speak, of all that. And now I would imagine that you and Bogey couldn't have been more polar opposites. Talk about, you know, Felix and Oscar here, because Von Hagen and Lang, you know, the sport means everything to, and their legacies. And then there's you and Vogie out there, you know, making a mockery of it. So I can kind of see things from their standpoint where they would be getting upset about, you know, tarnishing the final. So what was their reaction to you and Vogie when you guys were pulling that kind of stuff? Did they make any comments to you? Did they do anything or what?
No. No, they didn't do anything. They just stood there and looked at each other. No. Now I could have put my thumb up to my nose and go twinkle twinkle. I could do that. Now, that's one of my favorite things to say. Hey, I goof off.
Well, the other thing is that, do you recall how I believe Steno Brunicardi?
All the time.
He was there, and now he was the one that would try to help control the crowd and that would gather up a group of people to come out there and help clear off all those beer bottles. I mean, because it wasn't just a handful. I mean, I heard it literally, there were hundreds of bottles and cans thrown on there at multiple times throughout that final, when the fans would get, you know, where, you know, hooting and hollering, you and Vogie and against Von Hagen and Lang. Do you remember that part of it with Steno being there?
Oh, I tell you one story. Here's the thing about Steno. You know, Steno was real serious.
Yeah.
You know, he was a very serious guy. And I tried to goof off with Steno. we got into a little fight. Not punching, but I challenged him to a wrestling match.
Yeah.
So, and he has a lot of more muscles than I did, a lot more. I got a hold of him, and I got a hold of him, and I tightened up on him, and I got on top of his back or caught somewhere, and I said, "Hey, man, I'm done with this. I'm tired. So just roll over and." Hey, get on top of me, and I give up. because the guy had so much endurance.
Yeah.
And I have short endurance. I could out wrestle him for about, I'd say two or three, right down there in front of him in Sorrento.
Right in front of the wall.
Yeah. I could take him, but he had too much muscle. and then I said, "Nah, I give up.
Well,
I quit. That's enough. Yeah. I've done enough."
Yeah, he was a bull and a tough guy, from what I heard. Now, the one thing I remember about that final, from what I've heard, is that Steno was standing there watching it with you guys, and some guy wanted Steno to sit down because Steno was standing up. So he took one of those 1 liter bottles of booze, not a small, 16 ounce, but the bigger, thick 1 liter ones, and cracked it over Steno's head from behind. And it didn't even faze Steno. He just turned around, and I heard, like, you know, the veins in his neck would bulge out, and the guy took off running. And luckily, Butch May put his amateur rodeo riding skills to the test and ran guy down, tackled
Butch
him,
May.
Got a hold of him, and then took him. I think it might have been up to a lifeguard tower or else to a police car. I can't remember which one of them. I think it's in a lifeguard tower, and had him locked in there so that Steno couldn't get to him. Because if Steno did, that guy would have been in a world of hurt, from what I understand. Do you remember that part at all?
A little bit, but I don't have a lot about that. My son, I don't know if that was, I wasn't involved with it. But I loved wrestling with him.
Yeah.
And his wife was really nice.
The gazelle, Jean Brunicardi?
Darling, sweetheart. Yeah.
How neat. And what do you remember about Butch? Butch was a heck of a player. Remember him and Eileen Clancy? They were the standard for mixed doubles.
Oh, I played mixed doubles against him. The girl was set with a mixed, but you know, they always get the best partners, and I just get whoever. I said, "You want to be my partner?" And they just stand there and say, "Yeah." Do you play volleyball?
Now, what made Butch such a good player in the mixed court with Eileen? I heard she was one of the best bump setters ever, and Butch had tremendous stamina and tremendous range and shots.
I'd say that he's one of the top five players. Butch May, when he showed up late though. You know, he was really good. When I played against him, and I would always serve the ball somewhere away, and somehow he can move so fast to cross the court and bounce it up, and then he'd come running around, and he could jump. I remember Butch May when I got a set. I can remember this. This guy set me right on top of the net, and I squashed it straight down, and he came right under the net and popped it up to the other guy. I thought, gee, that's pretty good.
Yeah. That is. Butch dug it, huh?
No, he wasn't really a dig, because I just like squashed it down. Yeah. As a matter of fact, that might have been a throw.
It was like you were dunking a basketball almost. And
that's right.
And Butch owned you on it, and then probably put the ball away and gave you a smirk, like, "Yeah, nice try there, you Bruin chump."
you know, one thing, I don't think we ever conversed very much to the other team, but maybe we did. Maybe we had a lot of conversations during the time we played. I think we did. In all the plays, you know, because it was really fun just to make fun of the other guy. "Oh, gee, too bad you missed that." Or, "Oh, except that blah, 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 blah." But I think I won more than I lost.
That's nice.
But it was good. But that was not my, that's my feature sport.
Well, you know, I wanted to ask you, at that 67 Manhattan, I believe in the losers finals, you played against Lyle, a.k.a. Spike Bortz, and Bob Hogan. And
what do you recall
about playing against that team? I know Spike and Hogan were pretty darn good players themselves. So what can you tell me about them as competitors, and what was good about their game?
Well, we screwed around, and I think we like to harass the opponents.
Yeah.
I think the best part about playing in the tournaments is to harass the other team. And but you know, it's you know, the crowd starts to get into it, and then the beer comes in. It's always fun. Because usually I don't drink beer, but during the last, when you get in the finals or something like that, I take two or three beers.
Throw them back, huh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, what about Spike? I mean, Spike wasn't the biggest guy. He was 5'8", 5'9".
That's right.
What made him such a talented player? He was pretty damn good.
Oh, he sure was. But he was good. He was good.
Yep.
But he was good. Yeah. I'm good. I'm not great.
Yep.
The great people are the big tall guys like Mike and Mike Bragg and
O'Hara.
O'Hara. That was the best team on, because both of them can. O'Hara can really. It's the other one. He could jump.
Yeah.
But one of them was really tall. And I'm swan. Anyway, I like playing with them too. They were really good.
Yeah.
I will say that.
You know, O'Hara played in that 67 Manhattan with Gene Pfluger. And O'Hara was hurt. But like Lang once said, O'Hara was one of those guys that you'd have to kill him before he would ever give up. So he played that whole tournament. I don't know if he had a chest issue or an arm issue. And then he also was dehydrated and vomiting or throwing up between plays. So by the, I think they, Pfluger and him ended up finishing fourth. And and years later, Ryan O'Hara met Gene Pfluger, and he, you know, Ryan O'Hara, Mike O'Hara's son, and said to Gene, he goes, "Nice to meet you. Aren't you the guy that almost killed my dad in 67? Because he, I guess Pfluger kind of tried to take more of the court and all that sort of stuff. But I always thought that was a neat story, and spoke to Mike O'Hara's will to win. He it was at the top notch.
He was smooth. I'll tell you what, O'Hara was smooth. I love the way he approached, he approached, and he just, he was smooth. I mean he was the smoothest one, and it's hard to beat them anywhere in any shape.
Yeah, and you know who ultimately, I don't know how Spike and Hogan got out of it, but I believe, you know, who reffed your final, from what I've heard, is Pfluger, the fourth place team. He had a bird's eye view of you and Vogie in your antics. Von Hagen and Lang. So I bet, and I heard he couldn't even make it to the court to ref it, because when he was trying to, there were so many people deep, and he was trying to get through. A lot of people, some of the fans were so drunk they didn't recognize that he was a player trying to ref, and he almost got roughed up trying to get to the court just to referee the final. So that's pretty wild, all these crazy little stories like that. From what I heard too, is that tournament, Lang was the best player in the tournament, and he played spectacularly.
Oh, that's it. That's the main thing.
Now, speaking of later in life, you relocated to North Carolina, from my understanding, right? Did Vogie ever come visit you there? And do you remember approximately what year that was? When you guys were retired and older?
No, Vogie came back. We had a girlfriend. We double dated a while, but she left him, went to Florida. And he should have gone down there and married her, then bring her back to California. But he was stupid and stubborn, and he wanted to stay at the beach, you know. And and it was, he lived by himself. And the woman was fantastic. Georgia thought she was fantastic, and he should have followed her back to home, back to Florida, and stayed there for a while, get married, and come back to California. No, he was stupid. He was just stupid about it, and I told him that.
So ultimately what happens is you and your wife, Georgia, were living in North Carolina. Is that correct?
Well, I left the beach. Yeah.
You know, you were living down there in a house. Do you have a funny fishing story you can tell me about Vogie when he came and visited you in North Carolina?
Oh, man, I had a beautiful... I bought a 2-acre... The house had a house. It had a lake. It had a pool, and a pool house. I had a fish pond, and it was massive. That was beautiful. I think I paid $17,000 for it. And we stayed there for 2 or 3 years.
What year approximately was this?
Shoot, no, I can't even. I couldn't give you.
Sometime in the 70s, probably.
Whenever he came down, he'll tell you.
Okay. So you're living in this nice house in North Carolina with a lake and pool.
It was a flat roof, and it leaked a lot, so we had to put more rocks and stuff on there and keep it. It was a flat roof, you know.
Yeah.
And so we had leaks, so we had to finish the leakers had to have leaks fixed.
No pun intended.
No, but it, no, but yeah.
What part of Carolina was this?
Charlotte.
Okay. And and then you had Bogey came and visited you there, is what I understand.
Yeah.
All by himself, and And then how did what happened with this infamous fishing story? Let's hear it. He visited.
Oh you. Yeah, he just scooped up my fish out. I had asked the city to put in some brass and some brim and some bass in my pond, in my kind of my big pond, and they did. And he went out and fished them all out. And then
in the big pond, he went out fishing with like a fishing pole. Is that what happened in in the big pond? He went out fishing, and then what happened?
He came to it.
So what? You and Georgia left for the day. And you told Vogie, okay, you know, like June and Ward Cleaver with Beaver Cleaver, you said, here's a fishing pole and some bait. You go fishing for a while we're out running errands and behave yourself. Yeah. And when we come back, we'll see how you're doing is basically what it came down to.
We went somewhere. I know. When we came back, we didn't have any fish.
That's right. What in your little fish pond, right?
The little one.
So basically, Bogey caught those big bass in the big pond, and then after he caught them in the big pond? He threw them in your little fish pond, right, in the backyard?
And our little, what do you call those little
fish? All those goldfish, your pet goldfish?
Goldfish, yeah.
That's a classic. Oh my gosh. Leave it to Bogey.
Yeah.
Oh, that's one of my favorite stories ever, you know. Bogey's trying to catch some bass and he doesn't know where to keep them, so he doesn't think he throws them in your little, you know, backyard goldfish pond and lo and behold, they go to town on your goldfish and that's it. No more pet goldfish. Did you and Georgia scold them or give them a timeout or anything?
We never talk about it. We couldn't care less. He's just a funny guy.
We're going to take a quick break from Lika's interview, and we reached out to Bob Vogelsang to get his recollection of that trip to North Carolina when he tried his hand at fishing in that pond behind Lika's house and what happened to those goldfish. This is good.
All right, Bogey. I interviewed Lika and heard a pretty classic story about a time you went to visit him in Charlotte in North Carolina. And it's a fishing-related story, so I want to do some fact-checking with you and get your take on it, because if this story's true, it's going to be epic. So did you, in fact, make a visit to Lika's house after you guys had retired in Charlotte, where
I did. When I went back, I got married in South Carolina. I met a girl out here from South Carolina. She went to Pepperdine. I got married. We went back there to South Carolina so she could finish her grad school. Mm-hmm. And Bill was in North Carolina, so it was a perfect match. Both of our wives were Southern Belles. His wife was from Georgia, my wife was from South Carolina. And Bill and I, being Southern boys, Southern California, it was a good group. But anyway, they loved the heck out of us. We loved the heck out of them to visit. So they'd visit us, we'd visit them. And they'd say, oh, Bogey, you guys got to come up. We've got a new house. You're going to love it. Blah, blah, blah. We can play golf and tennis and everywhere. Okay, yeah, we'll be up there. So I go up and see old Bill. He says, well, let me walk down. It was a great house. I mean, like a four-bedroom, five-bedroom house in Charlotte. It probably was, I think they paid $70,000 for it. Like that ridiculous. Out here would have been $1.5 million or two at that time.
What year was that approximately? Sometime in the 70s?
That would be between 78 and 80. 78 and 80, right in that era.
Okay.
So I go back. We go back there, and he's walking me through. And he says, "Okay, now here's a great thing you're gonna like here. It's a big pond here." I said, "A big pond. This is a big pond, Bill. This is you don't swim in it. No, I've got them stocking with fish. I said, oh, you got fish in there. He goes, yeah, we got trout and crappie and some bass. I said, you're kidding. And he goes, no, there's a pretty good one there. I said, no, I'm just going to let them grow and get big. And he says, we got all kind of alligator. I don't think he had alligators at the time, but he ended up getting some alligators later. So I'm figuring, well, okay, I gotta try fishing out. So I had a little set up in my van. So I went back and got it and started fishing on my own while they're all inside. And I figure I'll be a hero. I'll catch some fish for dinner. So I'm not doing much. And the trout that I caught were very, very small. So I mean, they just stocked it. So I gotta try to get some bass. So anyway, I ended up catching one pretty good bass. I said, wow, I need a couple more. We got a dinner. Then I caught one more bass. And then I'm thinking, well, I don't have much time. I think I'll save it. Save these guys so they don't die. So I put them in. He also had besides a big swimming pool, they had a kind of a goldfish pond that was into the pool, you know, so there's a lot of water around and everything like that.
One of those smaller ones that are like a foot or two deep and be 10 feet by 10 feet. And that
yeah,
type but of thing.
Pretty good size. Yeah. Well, for gold, pretty, I don't think. Fish is live. So I had a fish in that, so I could always fish it back. But I'll put him in here. And if I catch one more bat, then they're going to be all cooked. If I don't, I'll put in the pond. Anyway, I didn't catch another one, but I hear all the splashing, so I figure somebody's in there swimming in the pool. All of a sudden, I come out about an hour later, and some kids are out there swimming in the pool. Okay, great. Come back fishing, all of a sudden, I think I have something like, oh, this is really a big fish here. And I start trying to pull on it. And it's not moving. I think, oh, no, I got a log or something. So I start pulling up, and it's a snapping turtle. A pretty big size snapping turtle. Like, give me, you know, he bit the hook, he bit the worm. I'm going, give me that. And I'm trying to pull. I'm not even trying to take it out like you would a fish. So I'm trying to just figure I'll break the line. It'll go away, no problem, or whatever. So I'm pulling on it. And he's not liking it. He's getting all pissed off. And I'm sitting on the log going, oh, man, let go. He reaches out and bites the line. And I fall on my ass. I just snap it, you know, the moment. Bam, my butt. That's a turtle. But I let him go in the water, being the nice guy that I am.
He got away.
In the meantime, I go back. And I didn't get any more, so I was going to get the fish and put them back in the pond. And they're on top of the fish pond.
They were
the goldfish.
The bass were floating in the goldfish pond.
What in the world? And I see all these little scales and a little small goldfish tail floating on top of it. Oh my God! It wasn't kids fishing in the pool. That was a. The bass chasing all those goldfish around. So they cleaned out all, I mean, you know, fish are like that. They'll eat till they die, and that's what happened.
So the bass.
I'm going, how am I going to explain this? You know, so and Bill comes out, what's happening, Luke? Oh, you got some. Yeah, what? Hey, don't put them in there. There's goldfish in there. And I go, well, there was, I guess, but you know. And he goes, "Oh God, don't tell Georgia." I'm not going to tell anybody. Don't tell Jan either. Okay. So we kept it as a big secret. We didn't, you know. He's laughing his ass off. He's going, "Oh God."
So all the leakers, pet goldfish, were dead.
Boiling. I could just see the bass of goldfish. All that. They made so much noise, it sounded like someone was swimming. Unbelievable.
So you went back up there, and the two bass you threw in there ate all of Lika's pet goldfish in that goldfish pond, and then the bass ate themselves, gorged themselves to death, and they were floating belly up.
Oh, yeah. So I gave them, I gave them to Bill saying, like, you know, you guys have a dinner or something. So I don't, you know, can't throw them back at the winter dead. So,
oh my
God. So I guess they ate them. I don't want to eat them after eating all the goldfish.
Oh gosh. Did, so you guys kept that a little secret between Vogie and Lika then the rest of that,
oh, yeah,
that time there. Otherwise, you would have been on a timeout, Vogie.
Oh, Jan would have said, come on, we're coming back. You're terrible. But it didn't happen. Jeez. I guess Georgia found out, where's goldfish ponds? Yeah, or something like that. That could cause those goldfish to die. You know? I can imagine what he's trying to say. He was like, because I didn't see any goldfish, you know, it's pretty dark.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh,
Vogie. But I mean, I wasn't looking for goldfish either. Let's put it, I just threw them in to save them for a while.
Right, you wanted a you wanted some fresh bass for dinner.
You
to fry
burn, you live in, you know.
Yeah, so that was your fishing escapade down there by Lika's place in Carolina.
That was it in a nutshell.
Now back to the conclusion of our interview with Bill Lika.
So before I wrap up with you here, Lika, yeah, tell everyone, you know, what you're up to nowadays, where you're living, are you married, do you have kids, and what are your hobbies? So basically we got the scoop on you these days in 2021 in Lika's world.
Oh yeah, I'm still a goofball.
No way. Come on now. My bullshit meter is off the charts.
I get up in the morning and I take a walk and then in the park. It's real rustic.
And you're in Charlotte now still? North Carolina?
I usually go down there before the real good players play, and I go on we'll go a little bit earlier. And I play with the easy guy, and I play easy, and I play.
What sport is this?
Pickleball.
Pickleball. Okay, so that's your new thing.
Yeah, and you play with a little wiffle ball, and you hit it with a little paddle, it's kind of a silly little game.
Yeah,
but it's not very serious.
Kathy Gregory is a big pickleball player. I think she plays with some of her Santa Barbara friends and Kathy Hanley. And
everybody plays pickleball.
We got to arrange a pay-per-view, you know, Lika versus Kathy Gregory, and we'll put a bunch of money together. See, winner take all. That Gregory, she's a one of a kind.
Did you know Gregory, the old guy?
Her brother, Bill?
That's the youngster. The old one.
I think there is Bob. Man.
Bob Gregory is the one we goofed off with. Oh, man, we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've heard.
I love that until he died. His owner got run over or something. He died in a car wreck or something.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't recall. I know that, you know, they're both no longer with us, and that they, you know, Kathy really thought the world of her big brothers and spoke fondly of them when I had the pleasure to chat with her. So, that was good crew of people you had.
Oh, she was sweet.
Married? Do you have children?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Tell us about your wife and your kids.
Well, 56 years.
So you're
wait a minute now. Wait a minute, we've been 56 years now. Okay, 56. And before that, I had it was a blind date, and I was playing down at Sorrento Beach, and a guy was dating her. Her roommate, and our first date was okay. We went down to the marina. Then the second date wasn't very good. Third date, we didn't have a plan, and I just went over to her wherever they were on Century Boulevard, and I knocked on the door. And I had just been coming from Japan because I was in a movie. And I was, it was something about Mount Fuji and all that war movie. And we came, when I came back, I had this real nice little velour sweater made in Japan. And I just walked up to her door and knocked at the door. And I said, she invited me in. And then, and she was a, had all these little bottles. So she was an airline stewardess, and she swiped all those little bottles and put them. And then we went to the beach and then just got together. Then it started together.
How nice. Well, that's some good stuff, Lika. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this interview about your volleyball career, your UCLA football career, and what you're up to nowadays, and that classic story about Bogey the Fisherman.
That's right. Well, oh, that's cool.
All right, pal. Well, I appreciate your time for this interview.
Don't forget to send us send me the whole thing if you can.
Okay, and I expect you to memorize it.
I have to print. I do it simple.
You got it, pal.
I'm Simon with that. I'm not very good at with much anything, but that's okay.
All right, you take care, Lika.
All right.
See you, pal.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Bye.
This concludes our three-part interview with Bill Lika. Thanks so much for tuning in. As a reminder, please make sure to visit our website, which is godstoghosts.com, where all of our podcasts can be found, as well as other additional information about the history of this amazing sport. With that being said, I'm going to wrap things up here. Thanks again for tuning in. Take care.